both are in harmony with each other. Only then this process takes place. That is why the Shanti Mantra says, may the disciple and the guru, teacher and the student, so both may be protected by God, may both be blessed. The teacher, the ability to convey, the student, the ability to receive. And then whatever has been transmitted, that transforms the disciple, because the guru is already one who has been transformed into reality. A guru is not a human being. The guru is an instrument. That means the body and the mind of the guru becomes the proper instrument for conveying the knowledge. Guru means knowledge, and the knowledge means Brahma. So guru is Brahma. So when both these harmonize with each other, then the transmission takes place. There are so many Upanishads. It is said there are thousands of Upanishads which have been lost. But there are more than 250 Upanishads presently available to us. Some of them have been written very late in history. There is also one Upanishad called Allah Upanishad. Allah Upanishad. The latest Upanishad is called Sri Ramakrishna Upanishad. Because the experience of any mystic, any great saint is an Upanishad. Whatever comes out from his mouth is nothing but an Upanishad. So the Gospel of Sri Ramakrishna is an Upanishad. The teachings of Swami Vivekananda is Upanishad. The teachings of Holy Mother is a Upanishad. So what is the Upanishad? That which deals with the highest reality, that is an Upanishad. And merely somebody talking about the Upanishad or highest teaching doesn't make it an Upanishad. Only a person who has become one with that knowledge, that teaching alone will become a Upanishad. So of these Upanishads, there are 10 or 11, because Shankaracharya had commented on these, they are considered as the major Upanishads. Of these major Upanishads, Brihadaranyaka is most marvelous Upanishad. Brihadaranyaka, it is called Aranyaka. It is called Aranyaka because Aranya means forest. This teaching is given in, usually used to be given in a forest by a great mystic or a saint to qualified students. In the olden days, there was a tradition of approaching the guru with firewood. This has a double symbolism. The first is, in those days, these ashramas or hermitages, they needed a lot of firewood for cooking food and also for conducting yajnas and sacrifices and other things. In those days, that was called the puja. What we now call puja, in those days, that used to be called yajnas and yagas. So the second symbolism is that the student brings the fire, indicating that he is prepared to sacrifice everything that he acquired previously so that the new teaching can come. In a way, it is a kind of rebirth, you know. Baptism is a rebirth. And Yajnopavita. And according to Hindu Shastras, there are four types of births. The biological birth is the first one. The upper castes, when they are invested with sacred thread, that is the second birth. And when a sincere student gets mantra diksha from a guru, that's called the third birth. when a person takes to monastic vows, sannyasa, that is called the fourth and last birth. So the fire symbolizes a new birth, as though the old man is dead and he is reborn all fresh. Jesus Christ says, unless a man is dead and reborn, he cannot enter into the kingdom of heaven. So somebody got doubt, does that mean that he had to commit suicide? No, it means that he has to wipe off, you know, reformat his hard disk and reinstall a new software, which would work most marvelously. That is the idea. So this Brihadaranyaka Upanishad is truly, Brihat means huge. So this Upanishad is huge not only in quantity, but it is also quality. Why? Because rarely we get in the other Upanishads the mention of so many qualified students, including women, Brahmavadinis. They were called Brahmavadini, a woman who only speaks about Brahman. Vadini means one who speaks. She will not speak anything excepting God. In those days, God means Brahman. That's why she is called Brahmavadini. A man who speaks of Brahman is called Brahmavadi, a sincere spiritual aspirant. Also a person who had realized Brahman, and such a person becomes Brahman himself. That point I will again explain to you very shortly. So he is not a man any longer, though there is a body, that he becomes Brahman himself. Brahmavit Brahmaiva Bhavati. So this is a point which we have to understand. When we are living in this world is called in philosophical language a world of relationships. So these relationships, they are the manifestations or expressions of knowledge. So I am the child of these parents is the knowledge. If this person doesn't have this knowledge, then that relationship will not form. This person is my friend. Unless that knowledge that of what is called a friend is present within, then there would be no friend. This person is my enemy. And I am happy. That's knowledge. I am unhappy. That is also knowledge. Oh, I didn't get what I wanted. That's knowledge. Oh, I got what I wanted. That is also knowledge. You see? So what happens? When some knowledge enters into us, we become that knowledge. When worldly knowledge enters into us, we become worldly people. When spiritual knowledge enters into us, we become spiritual people. When Brahman knowledge enters into us, we become Brahman. So all the great acharyas have commented upon these Upanishads, trying to convey their simple meaning to us. We follow mostly that of Shankaracharya's explanations, and we also try to understand Shankaracharya's explanations as well as the original script with the aid of Sri Ramakrishna and Swami Vivekananda's teachings. So in this Brihadaranyaka Upanishad, there are marvelous sections. For example, the dialogue between Yajnavalkya and Maitreyi, the dialogue between Yajnavalkya and Janaka, the dialogue between Yajnavalkya and other Brahmavadins and Brahmavadinis. And there are also sections which consist of Upasanas. So the Upanishad treats of both certain types of what is called Vidya. Vidya means a nice subject for upasana, so that prepares the mind of the student for the receiving of highest knowledge. So, for example, Sri Ramakrishna used to say that you go and do japa. That japa is not meant for the highest knowledge, but to prepare the student's mind to receive what Sri Ramakrishna is about to give. An unprepared mind cannot understand. So here is a nice point. Point is, information can be conveyed, but understanding must come from within. Every child knows 2 plus 2 is 4. But to understand why it is 4 and not 3, not 5, that understanding comes to us only later on. So this understanding is already there within. According to Vedanta, that the knowledge, or what I mean, not information, but true understanding. Knowledge means understanding is already within us. But it is covered with misunderstanding. So, all that you need to do is get rid of the miss. But if you make it misses, then there is very dangerous. Just to get rid of the miss, do not allow. To allow anywhere to come near, everything would be fine. So, misunderstanding already contains understanding. But it doesn't allow us to access it. That miss is a virus. Get rid of it. So these Upanishads, there are beautiful selections. As an example of this upasana, there is a upasana called Madhukanda. Immediately following what we are going to discuss, the very next chapter, 246, that is called Madhukanda or Madhu Brahmana. This, what we are going to discuss, is Maitreyi Brahmana. So, the next one is Madhu Brahmana. It's a beautiful upasana. But we will not go into it this year. If opportunity comes, we may do it in the future. But for now, I have selected one of the most marvelous of the parts of Brihadaranyaka, which is called the dialogue between Yajnavalkya and Maitreyi. So there is, very briefly, there is this introduction. There was a great knower of Brahma called Yajnavalkya. He was a rishi. There are many types of rishis, and all rishis are not concerned with spiritual knowledge. In the Vedas, anyone who has a special knowledge on any subject was called a rishi. For example, Vatsyayana was a rishi, and that mathematician Aryabhatta, he was a rishi. That mathematics has nothing to do with spiritual knowledge, but he has discovered something new. Einstein, rishi. He was a rishi because he discovered some new knowledge, and based upon which so many new inventions have come today. So anyone who discovers is called discovery, not invention, discovery. Discovery means it is there already, it is covered up, so you discover it, you remove the covering, that is called discover. So Vedantic theory is, if you are Brahman, all the knowledge is already there within. So these rishis, they purified their minds. As a result, they got this knowledge. Now, I mentioned not only spiritual rishis, but there are also rishis who discovered other types of knowledge. So any great scientist, any musician, any writer, any person who even discovers a new recipe is also a rishi. Then the question comes that why they discover those particular things. So, I would like to briefly give you a simple example. Supposing there is a person who works very hard and purifies his heart. Then the knowledge starts flowing. until it starts flowing, knowledge is knowledge. There is nothing called spiritual knowledge or scientific knowledge. So, to understand this one, imagine that there is a tank. It has 5 or 6 taps. So, the water is, you fill this tank with water, and that is called knowledge. Now, that water flows, you imagine that these taps are named as A, B, C, D, E. Now, you open the tap called A. So, where from the water comes now? Tap A. Suppose you open tap E. And where from the water comes? Tap E. So, what are these taps? These taps are called our 5 sense organs. Or in another way, so dance, music, literature, science, these are the taps. If this person purifies his mind, the knowledge starts to flow, but depending upon which tap he keeps open, through that particular tap, the expression, manifestation comes. See, suppose sunlight is coming from outside, there are 5 colored windows, and you covered all of them with curtains. You open one curtain. Then what happens? Light streams in through that particular window. But how does the light appear? If it is yellow colored, the light also appears to be yellow colored. So if a person's mind has developed or cleaned and opened the tap called science, then that knowledge streams in the form of scientific knowledge. If he is an artist, then when that knowledge starts coming, how does it manifest? In the form of art. See the point? It is the same knowledge. That is why we revere every type of knowledge. Saraswati. Somebody worships, a scientist worships Saraswati. So what does she give or what does he get from her? If a musician worships her, what does he get?
Music.
So the it is not Saraswati who selects. It is our receptive capacity which makes us receive that particular knowledge. But if a spiritual person approaches Saraswati, what does he get? Spiritual knowledge. So all are rishis only because the source is only one. Each one of us, in a way, we can become rishis by discovering something new, absolutely new. But depending upon where our interest is, we purify our tap or open our tap in that particular field. So the knowledge flows. What is the point? The point is, first point is that you don't need to go in search of knowledge. Where is it? Within us. The second point is that whichever channel we open, the knowledge takes the coloring of that particular channel. So we have this infinite knowledge within us. There were some people who were only interested in spiritual knowledge. Therefore, they have to follow the disciplines which will clean that particular channel through which the same knowledge flows. So, another point which is not directly connected with this, ananda, bliss. This ananda is only one. There are not 100 anandas, there is only one ananda. If this ananda flows through the eyes, then that person's eyes will enjoy beautiful forms. If this ananda flows through the tongue, then he becomes a great lover of food, etc. So if this ananda flows through the 5 sense organs, then he gets physical enjoyment. If this ananda flows through the intellect, then he will get intellectual ananda. If this ananda flows through another faculty called moral faculty, then he will enjoy moral ananda. But if this ananda flows through the spiritual faculty, then it is called spiritual ananda. Therefore, ananda roughly is divided by Sri Ramakrishna into three categories: Vishayananda, Vajrananda, Brahmananda. Ananda is only one, but depending upon which channel we keep open. But these channels, you know, they have some peculiarity. Only one channel will operate at any stage. So you can't keep on Brahmananda channel and also Vishayananda channel at the same time. If you open one, the other one will be, that is first point. The second point is, if the lower channel is open, the higher channel is closed. But once a person opens the higher channel, there is no way it permanently closes the lower channel. Because, you know, it is natural law, when we experience higher happiness, we don't want to go back to the lower happiness. When a person experiences Brahmananda, he doesn't want to come. If this point is not understood, and most of the people don't understand it, then they say, in 1 second they will be talking about Brahman, another second they will have their girlfriend, boyfriend and walking happily along, thinking that after all, you know, everything is Brahman, so this is also Brahman. Gospel, there is this thing, somebody tells this, oh, it is the same Ananda, Vishayananda, Brahmananda. Ramakrishna says, what are you talking, what nonsense are you talking about? You know, how can you compare the happiness which, pleasure which a man gets and produces children with the happiness a saint gets meditating upon God? Both these things do not go together. Only one channel will be opened at a time. The higher channel automatically, permanently closes the lower channel. This is the truth. So, this knowledge is, all knowledge is within us. All bliss is within us. All existence is also within us. Sat, Chit and Ananda are not three different things, but three different expressions of the one reality. So, at the very lowest level, the Sat mode of channel is open. This is what all the lower animals do, somehow survive. In a little higher type of animals, a little bit of Chit also flows. But in the highest type of person, the only channel that flows is Ananda. So, what does it mean? It means Sat, Chit and Ananda, one and the same thing. But three expressions are there. But progressively, a person who gets Ananda, these other two modes of expression somehow become suppressed. They are there, they are nothing but there. But that expression only becomes more prominent. If a man is in bliss, he doesn't need Chit, he doesn't need Sat. They are there. Not that they go away, because it is one and the same. But that mode becomes prominent. Yeah. So with this background, I would like to mention only one point. So this Yajnavalkya was a great rishi, and he was a householder, and he had two wives, Maitreyi and Katyayani. One wife was ordinary housewife, good person, chaste woman, but no interest in spiritual life. Maitreyi, who was the second wife, she was absolutely like her husband. She was not only a wife, but she was also a Brahmavadini. She only wanted God, Brahma, nothing else. So a time came, there was the Hindu division of, you know, ashramas. A time, the tradition was very ancient, we don't know how ancient, that every householder at some point is supposed to renounce the world. And there are two types of renunciation. Vidvat sannyasa, vividisha sannyasa. Vividisha sannyasa means a person has intense desire to realize God, to attain the knowledge of Brahman, but he hasn't attained to it. So in order to facilitate Brahma Jnana, he wants to be free from all these distractions, responsibilities, and so he takes to sannyasa. Legitimate sannyasa. So the other one is, for some reason, because of previous births, sadhana, etc., at some point suddenly he becomes enlightened. But he would like to take sannyasa to first to honor the tradition of the keep up the Hindu division of life, secondly to keep up that guru parampara system. Because however enlightened a householder is, he is saddled with lot of responsibilities. But his desire is, or God's desire is, through him this knowledge must flow and the tradition of sannyasins must continue. It doesn't affect the knowledge. A householder jnani and also a sannyasi jnani, as far as jnana is concerned, they are one and the same. But as far as the opportunity to convey it is concerned, then there is some restrictions are there in the householder jnani. It's what Sri Ramakrishna also says. Jnana doesn't make any difference. Some people become better instruments. God wants some people to become better instruments. Why he wants that, only he knows. But this was the Hindu tradition. So Yajnavalkya decided to follow this tradition. And so one day he was also a very rich man. Rich man means, in those days, riches means usually he has a lot of animals. Of these animals, cows. Because cows were the main animals which give milk. From milk you can make yogurt and ghee, which were used in performing yajnas, yagas, etc. So this Yajnavalkya one day called both his wives and said, "My dear, I have decided to renounce and lead the life of a monk. So there is a lot of money, property is there, wealth is there. I distribute this equally among both of you. Now give me permission, I would like to go." One of the wives, Katyayani, meekly had accepted and said, "That's fine." But the other wife had put a question that, suppose you give me wealth. The first point is that you are a very intelligent person. You have so much of wealth. Now you are renouncing this wealth. Who would renounce wealth and other things? Unless the person is getting something better, nobody would renounce the higher thing for the lower thing. Everybody would renounce the lower thing for the higher thing. So you must be getting something better. So if that is the case, why are you saddling me with this lower thing? I would like you to distribute what you have got. That I don't care. If necessary, I will also give up the whole thing. In fact, that is what is meant there. Yajnavalkya was very much pleased. This brings me back. This is, the husband. Until that time, Yajnavalkya was the husband and Maitreyi was the wife. From that point onwards, Yajnavalkya becomes the teacher and the Maitreyi becomes the student. This is exactly what happened in the case of Sri Ramakrishna. When Holy Mother came for the first time, then he went to her and said that, we are married, but I only want to devote my life to God. But since we are married, you have a right over me. Now, what would you like me to do? Do you want me to behave like any other ordinary husband? I am prepared to do it. This is the most marvelous thing. If suppose Holy Mother, just suppose, she said, "I don't know anything about your God. I want God like any other housewife, but not to this extent. I would like you to be a husband, like any other husband, give me children and all that. Just a question to you. Would Sri Ramakrishna say no? He won't say no. For two reasons. One reason was, he was a very decent gentleman. He would treat, because he is married, he knows the wife has the rights. The other thing is, he was already God-realized soul. Does it really matter whether he remains a husband, an ordinary husband or wife or monk? It doesn't really matter. There were rishis who produced children even after realizing God. This comes as a surprise to many of the devotees. Yes, now you are telling, sir, one who has attained Brahmananda, and how can he come to this lower happiness? No, it's not like that. He doesn't want. But if he thinks that is necessary, either because of marriage or because of some other reason, I will tell you also an example. Vedavyasa was such a man of knowledge. And when Satyavati's children, Vichitra, Virya and other his brother, they couldn't produce any children. Then Vedavyasa was called and he was asked to produce children. You know, Mahabharata is a marvelous epic, which very often we don't stop to consider these points. If he was a sensual person, then he could have enjoyed, oh, I want to have more of this enjoyment. No, he only fulfilled the desire, gave the children, and then immediately disappeared. That means he had that mind control to say, this is, I am doing a service to the people. So Sri Ramakrishna would have done, okay, if this is what you want, I will leave. It won't in the least have affected his knowledge, because he has already realized God. So it won't have affected him in the least. But like Maitreyi, immediately her Holy Mother's response was that I have not come here to put an obstacle in your spiritual life, but I also would like to follow the same path. So, Sri Ramakrishna became the teacher and Holy Mother became the disciple. The first disciple of Sri Ramakrishna was Holy Mother. So, what a Brahmavadini. Then what do you call Holy Mother? Brahmavadini. Even if you do not consider her as the Divine Mother, as a Brahmavadini, you would have considered her as the Divine Mother. So there are people, husbands and wives, who severed the relationship of ordinary husband and wife and became teacher and they taught. Same thing happened to Purandara Dasa. A point came when he told his wife, I am going to renounce. She followed him. Both lived like brother and sister and teacher and student, pursuing the same spiritual path. This happens even today. There are people who are married, householders, they still are householders, but they lead a spiritual life. This was what Sri Ramakrishna had taught. After the birth of one or two children, husband and wife must lead a spiritual life. So this is the background story. This story has some symbolism. What is the symbolism? That sannyasa, whether it is physical, external sannyasa or mental, internal sannyasa. Without sannyasa, there is no hope of attaining immortality. A householder still in that station, but mentally that person is spiritual and that person is a monk or a nun. So that is the ideal for all of us if we want to pursue our spiritual practice. You don't need to take sannyas. This was what Sri Krishna was teaching to Arjuna. Sarva karmani manasa sannyasyaste sukham vasi. Renounce all actions mentally. What is the meaning of renouncing all actions mentally? Actions are the direct result of kama, desire. So what is he telling? renounce all desires, all worldly desires, excepting one desire, which is called spiritual desire. But he goes on performing, do not renounce the actions. Here sannyasa doesn't mean renouncing the actions. Renounce the attachment or the results of these actions. In other words, convert every action into a spiritual action. Suppose you are a housewife, you are cooking food. You are cooking food for your husband, for your children. It is a karma. But if you want to be spiritual, or if you want to be worldly, then what you do, I am cooking for my husband, for my children. But if you want to be a spiritual person, the same action you will do. Just because you want to be spiritual, now I am spiritual, I am fasting today, you can go out to the restaurant. Many husbands are very eager to hear that word, you know. That is not what is meant. She or he, they will discharge their duties, but now they have a spiritual attitude. We know the incident, you know, one Brahmo devotee came to Sri Ramakrishna and said, I want to be spiritual, but I am bringing up my nephew and my mind is always thinking about the nephew. Then what did he say? He didn't say, you know, you throw away your nephew. He didn't say that. What did he say? You bathe your nephew, feed your nephew, clothe your nephew, play with your nephew. But think that he is not your nephew, but he is child Krishna. And within short time, she had the vision of Bala Gopala. Krishna was saying, Tumaki Chalata Ramachandra Bhajata Paijaniya. Who is writing this? A saint is writing. Tulasidasa is writing. So every child is a Krishna. That's what happened to the mother of Gopala Irma. And who was her Krishna? Thakur himself was her Krishna. So, it is not giving up the actions. No one can give up the actions. But change the attitude. Change the attitude means it involves two things. One is, what is the goal? Without a goal, you can't change the attitude. My goal is to become spiritual. Then, how to become spiritual? Now you change the second thing. I am doing this for pleasing the God within. For pleasing my child or Krishna in the form of my child. Husband in the Krishna in the form of my another child. Husband. Yes, every wife at some point becomes a mother. In fact, she is a mother. If any wife cannot feed her husband properly, she will feel bad. Have you not noticed? A loving wife, I'm talking about. This is the truth. Okay. So, there are examples. Sri Ramakrishna set an example. He could have become a monk. But he did not get out, he did not put on special clothes. He kept his wife with him. He even permitted her to sleep in his own bed. Why did he do all these things? For fun? Because he is setting an example. A person like Sri Ramakrishna can live. We have some hope, this life or next life. We can also, is it possible to remain a householder, to have family and yet become spiritual? That is why he remained in this state, very peculiar state. It is completely against Hindu tradition. No monk is allowed to keep his wife near him. But he did that because the times have changed and this is the ideal for the new age. Ramakrishna, Holy Mother, or what we call like Parvati and Parameshwara, absolute ideals for this world. It may be the highest ideal, but somewhere we have to start. So coming back to the subject, so Maitreya asked that I do not want any wealth. Then she asks a question before giving that statement. What shall I do with this wealth? She, before saying that, she puts a question. because she must have, the Upanishad is very brief, it doesn't give all these sentences. But what she asks is, you are offering me so much wealth, so if you are giving up this world, then what are you after? God. God means immortality, amrutatva. So if it is immortality, then you are asking me to accept this wealth. Does this wealth give me immortality? If he says yes, that means, why are you giving up? There must be some purpose in your giving up. So if you know that this wealth cannot give you the highest happiness, then what shall I do with this wealth? Because I am also exactly after the same thing that you want. So by this, the student is indicating to the guru that I have not come here for any other purpose. I only have come for one purpose. You have the capacity to give me either God or this world. But I have not come here to ask you to give me this world. I have come to, already he has offered it. I have come to ask you the other thing, which cannot be got excepting through the renunciation. Exactly what Katha Upanishad says, Yamadharma Raja offers when he says, I will give you these chariots, I will give you these, you know, apsarasas. Then he categorically refused. Why did he refuse? There are two reasons why he refused. The first reason is that was not his goal in life. All these enjoyable things. What it means is, he is not offering merely long life and objects of enjoyment. He is offering the highest happiness that can be attained in this world. So, if that was the goal of Nachiketa, his student, then he would have been happy. Even the Upanishad would not have proceeded further. First chapter itself would have ended. But then he said, no, I don't want to do anything with this. Why did he say, that was the second reason, that I don't want any of these things? That clearly shows that as long as I pursue this goal, that goal is not possible. These are two opposing goals. That is why he says there are two ways, the east and the west, the nivritti and the pravritti. If I choose pravritti, where would I be going? The opposite, worldliness. Worldliness can never give me immortality. Now here is, we have to understand, why can't it give? Why can't it give me? Because it is not that the Brahman is obstructing your happiness. So you go to an ocean. You want water, you go to an ocean. How much water is there in the ocean? More than what you can ever want. Is the ocean telling that I object to you taking, you can only take, you know, one chatak, 1 gram? But if you take a small vessel, then whose fault is that? Take this electricity, you know. Electricity is not saying you can't put 10,000 watt bulb. Who is telling that I want 50 watt light only? Who is telling? It is the same electricity which is used by the highest power consuming machines. It is our limitation. So worldly happiness means it is Brahmananda only. Worldly happiness is Brahmananda only. As we discussed, it is not different at all. Then what is the difference? The difference is, first of all, your pipe is very small pipe. Secondly, it is a very leaky pipe. There are 9 holes are there. Navadvari puri dehi naiva kurvan nakarayan. Then this pipe is a dirty pipe. So even though pure water is coming from there, it is not the fault of the source, but it is the problem of the instrument. So what we call the world in general is a very limited channel, and it has lot of leaks, and there are some things little more pure, clean, there are many impure things are there. That is why worldly happiness in fact is not different from Brahmananda, but because we can only get at the end, what do you get if it is a dirty pipe? What do you get? Dirty water. But if you want pure water, then you must produce pure pipe. But if you want even this limitation also to be removed, then don't put any pipe. Just go and drown yourself in the tank. Brahmananda Sagare Dube Jav, Dubu 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 Rup Sagare Amar Mon Talatal Patal Kunjali Pabire Prem Ratnadhan. So the point, what is the point I am trying to make? So all this wealth that we have, it is not that it is undesirable. This is the point I am trying to make. It is not that Sri Ramakrishna doesn't want the wealth. What he says is, when I can go to the source and have the purest type of happiness, why should I satisfy myself with this limited, impure type of happiness? That's all, he said. Nobody, this Upanishads never condemned any type of pleasure or happiness. Just it only says there are higher types of happiness. So when you know there are higher types, why don't you try to get them? But to get them, you know, the channel has to be made pure. It has to be made less and less limited. Remove the limitations. So when you remove the limitations, even then it is limited. But if you remove the channel itself, go to the ocean and then become one with it. This is the idea. No condemnation. All this condemnation of this world is unreal and this is Maya, all these things were post-Shankarite contributions. Our Vedic visions never had this kind of idea. Everything is joy. Madhuvata ritayate madhuksharanti sindhavaha. The beautiful breeze is blowing, it is sweet. All the nature is sweet. All the rivers are flowing sweet. Everything is sweet. So this is another point. It is the same material, but the channel, by channel I do not mean anything else but the attitude. If you know, if you have knowledge, you know you will get through all channels the purest of Brahmananda. So the meaning of this particular Madhuvata Ritayate means what? You know this tank or this ocean, and the water is being piped through pipes. But these pipes, in our case, are limited, leaky and impure. In the case of a Noera Brahman, every channel is absolutely pure, so that whatever the water comes in through whichever channel, it is nothing but the same sweet, pure waters. That is why when Sri Ramakrishna eats, it is Brahmananda. When he listens to music, that is Brahmananda. When he sees a beautiful sight, that is Brahmananda. Everything is Brahmananda only. To understand Sri Ramakrishna, the incidents in Sri Ramakrishna's life and his teachings, we need proper understanding. Just to give an example, he said, one day I saw that a dog and a beach, where they were enjoying themselves. What did he say? I saw Shiva and Parvati's union. You know, we don't want even to talk about these things. We think that it contaminates our mind. What is he seeing? It's with the tantric worship. He was asked to worship a beautiful young woman. Where was his mind? What was he seeing in that woman? He was seeing the Divine Mother. So what do we see? an object of enjoyment. Where is the fault? It is the same object. Every object they see is reminds them of Brahman, and so they get Brahmananda. To give a small example, we also do it occasionally. You get a fruit, eat it. That is called Vishayananda. Take the same fruit to Thakur, offer it. Then you eat it. Eating is the same. What a difference. Now it is Brahmananda, spiritual joy. What do you call prasada? Spiritual joy. But don't become too unintelligent, you know. There was a diabetic fellow who came and we had a sweet prasada. So he was happily eating. I asked him, hey, you have got diabetics, you are eating. Swamiji, this is prasada. Prasada. I said, prasada doesn't understand that you, whether you have diabetes. It understands you have diabetes and it will affect you. It doesn't say this fellow is only a devotee. Since he is a devotee, I as prasada sweet, I will not affect his diabetes. It doesn't say that. So, coming back to our subject, so Maitreyi said that what shall I do with this wealth? Will it give me immortality? Then he in reply he says, no, it will not give you immortality. Then what does it give? That it will give you modern comforts. It will give you first class 52 inches, you know, plasma TV. It will give you MP3 player. It will give you beautiful car. It will give you beautiful house. All these things are possible only for people who have the money to spend for that. But it will not. There is no question of gaining immortality. That are Brahmananda. Why? Not because there is anything wrong with these objects. Because these objects have limitations. So the Brahmananda that flows through these objects is extremely limited. But if you want immortality, mortal happiness, because mortal happiness means limited, immortal happiness obtainable to us in a limited quantities. But Brahmananda means remove these limitations. So this is the point we have to understand. Renounce the world not because the world is bitter, not because the grapes are sour, but because it has inherent limitations. You see, that is the point we have to understand. Now, when I said that these objects have inherent limitations, again we should not misunderstand. The objects themselves are the limitations. Our attitude, that is the limitation. The limitation is not there in the object. The limitation is within us. You know, as I mentioned, if you eat a banana, the banana is not limiting you. It is your attitude that is limiting you. Offer the same banana to God. Now what did you do? You removed the limitation. From where?
Mind.
Not from the banana. It is the same banana. From our minds, the limitation is removed by this act. See how wonderful it is? Now I will read out the text. Saho vache agnyavalkya. It is 2:4:5. Priya bata are. Na sati priyam bhashase. I'm sorry about it. It is 2:4:1. Section 4. Maitre iti hovache yagnivalkeha udyasyanva are aham asmat sthanat asmi hanta te anaya katyayanyantam karavaniti. O Maitreyi, I am about to renounce this life, my dear. Well, let me end your relationship with this Katyayani. Let me end your relationship. What was the relationship before? Co-wife. Now, when there is no husband, there is no co-wife at all. So that means indirectly saying that I am going to renounce. When I renounce, then you become separate, two separate people, because it is the wifehood is only is possible when there is a husband. So indirectly he is indicating that I will not be your husband from this time onwards. Sa hovacha Maitreyi. Then Maitreyi started to speak. So the point is Katyayani did not speak. That means she accepted. Yajnavalkya said, okay, if you want to renounce, you go and renounce, become a monk. And you already, the background story I told you, that I am ready to accept whatever wealth is there, my half, and I will be, I am quite content with it. These words are beautiful. Yanno yam bhagoho sarva prithivi vittena purnasya katham tena amruta syam iti. Na iti ha uvacha yajnavalkyah yathaiva upakaranavatam jivitam tathaiva te jivitam syat amrutatvasya tu na asha asti vittena iti. So Maitreya asked, O Lord, Bhagaha means Bhagavan. It was the respectable addressing by inferior to a superior. Either a disciple is addressing the guru, student is addressing the teacher, wife is addressing the husband. Anybody who is in an inferior position addressing the superior, sir. Respectable sir, not this American sir. American sir, you know. Don't know, American sir. Here is the man going in the bus or train. Hey guy, move over. Suddenly one day he is travelling in the same bus after 15 years. Sir, will you please move a little? He surprises. All these days he is calling me guy. Suddenly he is calling me sir. What he is telling is, you old fellow, move. Sir means old, not American sir. It's a respectable term. We get this many times in the Upanishads, especially the disciple addressing the guru. So, yayam sarva prithivi vittena purnasya. This whole earth, if it is filled with tremendous amount of wealth, how much wealth? Completely fill this earth with wealth. Tena katham amrutasyamiti, will I become immortal? Amrita. Amrita means death, mortality. Amrita means immortality. Do I become immortal through all this wealth? Na iti hovacha yajnavalkya. Oh, beautiful, you know. There is no question of explanation. No. You are not going to become immortal. Then what is the good? He is also giving a brief explanation. Yatha upakarana vatam jivita. Upakarana means objects of enjoyment. You have a lot of facilities, comforts. Nice shower, bathroom, refrigerator, car, this, that, so many things. So if the people do not have those things, their life will become a little difficult. But if these things are there, life becomes a little more easy. So a person who has lot of wealth, he will live like a person of wealth, means a person of lot of comforts. Tatha eva te jivitam syat. If you get lot of wealth, you will also live like a wealthy person. Amrutatvasya tu asha na it. Asti vittena, but there is absolutely no hope of amritatva vitta. Vitta means what?
Wealth.
We have to understand it in a wider sense. So there is a misunderstanding that wealth by itself will give happiness. No. To have happiness, three things are necessary. We discussed it many times, remember? Three things are necessary to get happiness. What is that? My God.
You should have the correct strength to enjoy.
Three
the
things.
Circumstances have to be right.
Three things are necessary. You are almost there, but be clear in your thoughts.
No.
Three things. Let me give an example. You want to enjoy a sweet. First of all, you must have the sweet, the object. Secondly, the body which has to eat that sweet must be in a healthy condition. Thirdly, the mind which is possessing this body must be also in a very healthy state. That's why I gave that beautiful example. Yes. Anyway, we have to repeat, you know, that's why so much repetition is there here. You know, supposing one day you decided to eat first class rasagulla. You get a very good rasagulla, made best rasagulla, and you are very hungry, and you are put the rasagulla in front of you, you are about to eat. Then suddenly you feel the butt of a, you know, gun behind your neck, your head. And then the person tells that, eat rasagulla, otherwise I will shoot you. He is not saying that don't eat. If you eat, I will shoot you. He is telling you, eat that sweet, otherwise I will shoot you. Can you be happy?
No.
Why? Because you cannot eat. No, you must eat voluntarily without the least bit of worry or fear or anxiety or stress or anything. See the point, the mind must be absolutely worry-free. So, if there is anything wrong with the object, it will limit the happiness. Is anything wrong with the body, that will again limit the happiness. If there is something wrong with the mind, that also will limit the happiness. These three conditions must be fulfilled. That is why automatically a wealthy person will not enjoy life. Because if he has earned that money or objects, then he will have the object. But if he is a worried man, if he is suffering from dyspepsia, then he will not enjoy it. So this is called vitta, means that is what is meant by vitta. That is why in the purushartha, what is called the supreme values of life, there are three things mentioned. Three conditions must be fulfilled for the enjoyment of worldly objects. What are those three? First three? Dharma, artha and kama. That means dharma is a proper condition of the body and mind, healthy condition of body and mind. Artha, the means for obtaining the object. And kama means that desire must be there. Without desire, you know, even if the best things are there, you will not be able to enjoy it. What a wonderful thing, how beautifully you put. Without dharma, there will be no artha. There may be kama, but there will be no artha. Without dharma, then there may be both dharma, artha and kama. But without, there some people have dharma, but no artha, but kama. Dharma and kama is there. Dharma and artha are there. But that won't complete the happiness. All the three must be present. So that is the condition of happiness. So vitta. By this word vitta, he is indicating dharma, artha and kama. But there is a fourth purushartha, which is called moksha. This moksha is not possible with these three. If you want moksha, you will have to, that means worldly happiness and spiritual happiness, pravritti and nivritti. Pravritti means what? you know, scriptural words. Pravritti means worldly, seeking worldly happiness. What does Hinduism say about it? Pravritti is only pravritti when these three are present. Dharma, artha and kama. Supposing there is artha and kama, can you call it pravritti? No, you cannot do it. Pravritti means the best worldly happiness. It is only possible when these three are present. Otherwise, now. See how wonderful it is? So, if anybody wants nivritti, then the pravritti has to fly through the window. I already explained why. It is not because pravritti is bad. Pravritti means limitation. You limit the instruments. Your happiness depends upon the limitation of your instrument. So here you destroy this instrument, means you go beyond both body and mind. When do you get that infinite happiness? As long as you are within the body and mind, operating from within the body and mind, however much happiness is available there, you can only access it through the limitations. You can't go beyond the limitations. You see, how much can you eat? Even the richest man, how much can he eat? Only to the limit of his stomach and our digestive power. Is it not? Is it not clear to us? Many limitations are there. A rich man may have 1,000 dresses. How many dresses is he going to put on? He suppose he has got 2 cars. In how many cars he is going to travel? Suppose he has 2 bedrooms. In how many bedrooms he is going to? Suppose he has 5 bedrooms. So, I must be equally please all the 5 rooms. So, amritatva means going beyond the limitations. That is the meaning given. What a beautiful meaning. Nowhere in the Vedas do we get this negative attitude towards life or world. This is all later on development. Vedic vision is that you have proper attitude, and proper attitude is the result of proper knowledge. What is the relationship between attitude? There are 3 words: knowledge, attitude, relationship. Do you understand that?
Relationship gives the knowledge.
First comes knowledge. Yeah, let me say, okay, here is, you meet a person. You don't know what that person is like. So, you want to know. Then you will come to know after working with that person or living with that person. You have some amount of, more or less, you know this person is like that. You have the knowledge. This knowledge forges attitude. If he is good, if you know that he is a good person, your attitude will be a good attitude. If you know that that person is not a good person, your attitude will be a negative attitude. And when a person has good attitude, the relationship would be a good, you call him a friend, well-wisher. If it is a negative attitude, then the relationship would be a negative relationship. Is it not right? So, knowledge, attitude and relationship. So, what is pravritti? Pravritti is that knowledge which says this world is either good or bad or good, nice, pleasant. Then the attitude will be, it's, I must enjoy this world. Then the relationship would be, I am the enjoyer, this is the enjoyable. That's wonderful. There's nothing wrong in it. Proper knowledge, you can make friends of people, or you can also make enemies of people. You know, they are saying there are people who mix and make lot of friends. There are other people who cannot make friends. It's not the fault of the people, the fault of the limitation of the person. See how wonderful it is. So, our relationship with the world depends upon our knowledge of the world. This knowledge of the world produces that appropriate attitude. That appropriate attitude results in appropriate relationship. So the Vedas are not condemning. What is pravruti then? Pravruti is to have good knowledge of the world and have good attitude towards the world and have good relationship with the world. Fine. But then what does your knowledge say? If you know about the world, then you will say this is a limited world. World is limited. But my goal is to have more than this. So what am I talking about? However great will be our knowledge, we know thoroughly about our body and our mind. Then if we really have correct knowledge about the body and mind, the first result of that knowledge would be, I know my body and mind are limited. But I want unlimited happiness. What is the way out? We must go beyond the body and mind. Not destroy the body and mind, but go, grow beyond the body and mind. And we do that in a limited way in this world. How do we do that? Here is... No. I am talking about the world. Here is a person and he has good knowledge about his body and mind. He can get that much of happiness or pleasure. Then he gets married. Then what happens to him? He has increased his identity. Then I am not one, I am two. So how much happiness he gets now? When his wife is happy, he is happy. When his wife is unhappy, he is doubly unhappy. See the point. Then children come. Then his identity has extended. So let a person extend his identity to the whole world. Even then, it is a still compared to the infinity, a limited type of happiness only. This is first point. Second point is, in this world, if we have proper knowledge, every happiness has its own opposite. Therefore, there is nothing called perfect worldly happiness. If you want happiness, you also have to at the same time accept its counterpart, sukha, dukkha, dualities. And when you accept both of them, then you get what you call the best happiness that is possible from this world. But a time will come and then you say, this is not enough for me. And then the attempt, when you really understand it, because we all want infinite happiness, no doubt about it. But because of our two things, one is that we are stuck to these old habits, so we want to derive only this happiness which is available through the five sense organs, etc. Second, we know that higher happiness is possible in this very world, but we are what Scott Peck calls, suffer from the disease called laziness. You know, the road less traveled, he very beautifully points out what Vedanta calls tamas. He calls it laziness. Laziness means, you know, if you want higher happiness, what is the law? You get happiness according to your effort. So more effort, if you want more happiness, more effort is necessary. But many people, they don't want to put forth effort. Therefore, they are quite content to have whatever happiness they can squeeze with their old habits. So these are the two problems. But however these two problems are there, a time will come when we will not be discontent any longer. We become discontent. That is why Bhagavad Gita, it says, you know, Chaturvidha Bhajante Mam Jana Sukrutino Arjuna. There are four types of devotees who worship me. What is the first stage? Artha. Artha. First is Artha. That is, we want to survive, we want to, don't want any unhappiness, we don't want any danger or difficulties. Any type of difficulty is Artha Bhakta. Higher step is, he has no difficulty, but he wants a little more of this worldly wealth. He is called Artharthi. Artharthi. He wants more. But a time will come, the Lord says, when a person, after enjoying this world to his heart's content, then he says, even this is not enough for me. It's like drug addiction. First you start with a small dose, and after that a bigger dose, and after that there is a limit, and say, then I want that which will give me infinite happiness. That is when the third stage he enters, it is called Jignasa. He is a bhakta. Only a devotee can have Jignasa, not an ordinary person. Ordinary person means, ordinary persons are always divided into these two classifications. Either they are Arthas or Artharthis. But when a person has passed these two stages, he need not say, now what shall I do? Automatically, the third, the quest comes, what next? Tatah kim. Then he enters into Jignasa. That is also a great spiritual progress. What Sri Ramakrishna calls intense yearning. Then comes the last stage. When he has the knowledge, then this knowledge brings the highest type of devotion. Because he knows, this is my real parent. This is my real nature. This is what is called Atma Bhakti by Shankaracharya. Atma Bhakti means devotion to one's own true self. In our terminology, ordinary devotees, we are devoted to a personal God. So that is why Vedanta tells us there is nothing wrong in worshipping a personal God. But a stage will come when personal God is also a limited God. We must go beyond this. Anything that is a personality is a limitation. It will come. So though dualists don't agree with that, and they do not know what they are talking about, that's why Swami Brahmananda was once asked, there is a saying in Bengali, Ami chini hote chayna, chini khete chayna. I want to eat sugar, I don't want to become sugar. What is your opinion, sir? And Swami Brahman said, that is the idea of a person who has never really tasted sugar. Yeah. Once he tastes sugar, he doesn't want to have 1 millimeter, 1 billionth of a millimeter separation from the sugar. It will come. We don't need to worry about it. We are far away from it now. It will come. But intellectually, we should try to understand this is how the progression takes place. So by Vitta, what does Maitreyi say? My body is perfect, my mind is perfect. I know this is a terrible limitation. I want to go beyond the limitation. So what is the point? She is not rejecting the world, not because it is in any way opposite to Brahman or God, but because it is limited. So to go beyond this limitation, truly from our heart of hearts, that is called vairagya. That is called detachment. What a marvelous idea. People have vairagya means what? Grapes are sour. And lots of vairagyas are there, you know. Market vairagya, smashana vairagya, prasuti vairagya, unemployment vairagya. No, a person has everything and yet he wants to have higher happiness. This idea is so beautifully put forward in the Taittiriya Upanishad, in the second valley, called Brahmananda Mimamsa. If a young man is there and he is strong, young, intelligent, and the whole world is under, belongs to him, he can get any happiness he wants from this world. That is the measurement of one perfect human happiness. But 100 times greater than that is the happiness, or one measurement of the happiness of Gandharvas. 100 means not exactly 100, million times, millions of times. So, millions of times of human happiness is equivalent to one measurement of the happiness of a Gandharva. Like that it goes on, Prajapati and Brihaspati and all those. Ultimately, there is no limit, all these are limited. The idea is to say, oh, however much happiness you get in this universe, it is all limited. Brahman happiness is alone is unlimited. Maitreyi by this is indicating that vitta means wealth, means all the happiness that the world can give, this world or Brahmaloka, what we call this creation can give, is severely limited by its very nature. And therefore, I want to have unlimited happiness. That is called sannyasa. So what is she telling? Through this conversation, what is the Upanishad conveying to us? That if you want unlimited happiness, you will have to become sannyasin. What a beautiful idea. So that is why sannyasa is called the highest ideal. That is why we respect sannyasins. They may not be perfect people. When we respect a sannyasin, we are not really respecting the person. We are respecting the ideal which he is put placing before us. Similarly, when the Vedas say, Matru Devo Bhava, let your mother be God. We know our mothers are not God. But why? Because she is the highest expression of, if God were to be our mother, then this is the highest expression we can get. So think of God as your mother. Think of your mother as God means, think of God as your mother. How many billions of times of motherly love we get from God? Pitru Devo Bhava, Acharya Deva, Guru Brahma. If you think human body is the Brahma, then we are severely mistaken. No. It is God who is expressing through the teacher, whom we should consider as the Guru. The Guru bodies, Guru's body and mind are instruments. So with this word, this understanding is given to us that if you want the unlimited happiness, you have to go beyond limitation. That understanding, that we have to, if we want unlimited happiness, we should go beyond limitations, and the attempt to give up those limitations, that is called vairagya, that is called sannyasa. So that is what had happened. Only when a person is ready, the goal is unlimited happiness. The process is the desire, absolute readiness to give up all limitations. That is the qualification for any student who wants Brahma Jnana. Through this, the Upanishad is conveying us this idea. Om Sahana Vavatu, Sahana Bhunaktu, Sahaviryam Karavavahai, Tejasvi Navadi Tamastu Mavid Shavai. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Hari Om Tat Sat. Sri Ramakrishna Arpanamastu.